Life is short, so dig in deep and be swayed by Leah Love's erotic rhetoric.
Erotic Rhetoric with your host, Leah Love, on Jackalope Radio.
So I am here for you. Life is short, dig in deep, and be swayed by Leah Love's erotic rhetoric. Hello, my cats and kittens. It's Leah Love, and you're listening to Erotic Rhetoric. I hope that you had a fabulous week. I sure did, I'll tell you what. I had two great Fantasia home parties over the weekend. I made some great money. I reconnected with some wonderful friends. I met some great new people. And one of the new people that I met owns a restaurant in New York City called Saigon Market, which is on University Place in the Village. And I've got a date to go there sometime in April. I'm very excited about it. This is what I love about doing my business. I meet all of these exciting people. They invite me to their own businesses. Wonderful. So if you live in the area, I suggest you check it out. I heard a lot of great things about this place. And you can look it up on the web at SaigonMarketNYC.com. And of course, you can always reach me, Leah Love, at leah.love.lust@gmail.com. And in saying that, I do want you to send love, lusts, comments, problems, encouragements, issues, what have you, and I will answer them on the show. So tonight, we are going to get right into it. And we have an interview with a very interesting young lady who is a dominatrix working in on the East Coast. And her name is Miss Teagan. And she works for Goddess Destiny's Chamber, which you can view at destinieschamber.com. So I would like to welcome to the show tonight, Miss Teagan.
Hello.
How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Well, I must admit, I'm very excited about your appearance on tonight's show. I have a lot of great questions. I hope you're excited.
I am very excited.
Okay, good. So let's jump right into this. I've got a lot to cover here. So first, how long have you been a dominatrix?
I'd say for about 8 months.
So now, if you've been a dominatrix for 8 months, is there like a training period, say, where you're in training and then you go out onto your, you know, into your own? Or is it you're a dominatrix for 8 months and it's just you and that's it?
Well, I started with Destiny, and she mentors me, basically training me for, I guess, about a month or two before I actually started taking my own sessions. And it's actually a continuous training. I'm continually learning more new things. And so it starts out with just her and me learning for the first two months, and then slowly me taking my own sessions from then on out.
I did take a look at the website, and you do mention with some of the specific services that you offer that she will sometimes come in and assist, but that she won't stick around. She'll just come in, assist, make sure that everything is okay, and then, you know, she'll just leave you to your client.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Okay. And that's mostly for the new things that I learned. She'll come in and just help me out to make sure I'm doing everything properly. And then she'll let me finish the rest of the session on my own.
Gotcha. So now I just realized that, you know, I think most people know what a dominatrix is, but do you want to kind of explain maybe what your definition of it is? Because I did participate in some sub-dom stuff way back in the day. And a lot of people, I think that it has to do, that it's sexual, that it's sex acts, and it really doesn't involve any type of sex at all. As a matter of fact, on your website, I noticed that if somebody, a client, you know, wants, to have you sit on their face, that you wear underwear, correct?
Right, right, okay. Exactly.
So I think that's an important thing to mention when we talk about it. But what would you say if somebody were to say to you, well, what exactly is a dominatrix? How would you answer that question?
Well, there are many different definitions for dominatrix. The way I see myself is I see myself as a person who is interested in many different fetishes. and will work with people and what they're interested in the different types of fetishes that they have. One fetish could be just simply smelling someone's feet. Now,
Do have beautiful feet, by the way. Yeah,
thank you. So something as simple as that, that could be a whole session. Me with my feet and, showing the person my feet, letting them smell them, maybe even letting them kiss them. It's different fetishes. There's so many out there, and it's almost every day a new one is popping up. And to me, that is so interesting, and that is mostly what I focus on, is the different fetishes. Now, as a dominatrix, there are women that will mostly focus on, discipline and more of a sometimes a mother figure, something right, like right. that. But
is it safe to say that regardless of whatever the fetish is, though, that obviously as a dominatrix, you are dominating the client in their fetish, but you're the one who's in control?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Absolutely.
So, and anybody can go look at the website, which is destinieschamber.com, and go look at some of the services that they provide. So, I'm curious, what made you decide to work as a dominatrix?
Well, there's a funny little story.
Funny little stories.
Many, 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 many years ago, I'd say even maybe 10 years ago, I was at a club with a friend of mine, and there was what was called a pony boy at this club. Now, I had never seen anything like this in my life. It was a man dressed with like a harness on so women could ride on his back, and he had like a tail attached to him, and he would act like a pony. And it blew my mind that someone would actually do something like that, that it kind of stuck with me. And it was always in my mind like that I would want to maybe revisit something like that.
Right.
And a friend of mine actually is a dominatrix, and she had said to me, listen, I think this would be really great for you. Why don't you just go and see what it's about? This is now, the present day. And I said, you know what? I really do find certain things interesting about it. Let me sit in and see if it is something that would be good for me. And it really was. It was a great match for me.
That's isn't it funny when you have something in your past and it kind of, you have like a little bit of a retread of it in your future or in your present, shall we say that, and you feel like it just clicks, and it didn't click back then in terms of making it a career or, something that you actively did. But then, years later you get an opportunity. I love it when that happens. And so the timing is just right.
Exactly.
So now this particular goddess, Destiny, is that her name?
Yes.
I kind of am curious how easy it was to break into the business, but I assume with having her as a mentor, and you had a previous friendship with her. Mm-hmm. So probably for you, it was fairly easy to kind of get into what you were doing.
It was easy in that she guided me on how to promote myself. She guided me on what I needed to really learn. She's a wonderful woman who has the patience of a saint, and she really puts her all into the business, and she wants to see the women that work with her succeed.
Right.
So it is wonderful to have her mentor me, because she really did guide me.
Right. Well, that's great. Now we did discuss a couple of the things that maybe you do in terms of the fetishes. But, I did look up the website again and found a couple of things I wanted to just ask you about. And a couple of the things I wanted to talk about were, for instance, enemas. What exactly is the, and I know, I don't think you would need to say, oh, well, this is why people love this. But What is the, how is that used in a dominatrix session? Like, you're, I guess, playing the doctor in, is that kind of how the straight play on that is, that it's the doctor giving the patient enema? Like, what does that entail?
Okay. There's many different ways it's used in sessions. One of them could be just to make sure the person's clean before getting further into the session. Some people don't know how to give themselves enemas, and some people don't want to do it at their house. So they'll come to us and say, listen, you know, I want our session to go a certain way, but I need to be certain that I am clean in certain areas. So we will do an enema there for them. Now, we also do the doctor nurse kind of play, where they will, use the enema as like a cleanser that the nurse is giving them, mm-hmm. and okay. that will be sort of like a medical, that falls under sort of like medical play.
Are you comfortable just answering, like, can you give me an example of what can happen during a session that a client would request an enema for? Because my understanding of an enema is it cleans out the inside of your rectal chamber.
Yes.
So
yes,
what would be, right, so, but like the outside, you clean up with baby wipes. I mean, I do that on a daily basis. So
yes, yes.
So what would be, would you mind answering, what would be an example of something you would do after an enema where you're basically cleaning somebody out? What do they want to be cleaned for?
Some people like to have butt plugs.
Okay.
Inserted. And mm-hmm. throughout the session, they want to keep that in. And to put the, I mean, granted, you don't have to be clean, but it is what we would rather. Yes.
Oh, I hear you.
So, yes, we do use butt plugs. And
I wear those on the subway. Or I used to when I used to take the subway.
Lovely. So yeah, that is one of the reasons why we would do an enema.
Okay. Okay. Good to know. I'm not taking notes or anything. No, so now, do you mind if I ask you, and you don't have to mention any figures, but are you making decent money?
It depends on the day. It absolutely depends. Because
is it would be on a specific day, would it be more than you would make in a traditional job, say?
Yes, it could be. If the clients are there, then yes, it could be.
Gotcha.
There are days when there are no clients.
Okay.
And therefore I don't make any money that day.
Okay.
So it does depend.
Okay. So now, are you comfortable talking about maybe, like, what's one of your weirder encounters that you've had so far?
Okay. Well,
and you don't have to go in crazy detail or say anything that would specifically identify anybody, but, you know, maybe just, kind of a couple of little general things that you were like, huh. I feel like you have something in mind. If you're not comfortable, that I have no problem with that. I just figured I'd ask.
Well, let me just throw out there that almost every session, there's a little something where you're like, oh, okay. Like, you weren't expecting something to go a certain way. So it's actually, it could happen
every
almost.
Every day is a different day.
It really is.
Wow,
It really is. Each person has their own fetish, their own way of expressing it, and they'll, of course, tell you what their interests are, mm-hmm. and you try, and you'll work with them. But sometimes they'll take a curve, and you just have to go along with it.
Go with it.
It keeps it interesting always.
Okay. Now, I'm fascinated by this, but I'm nervous to ask because it makes me sound like I don't know what I'm talking about. However, I'm curious, do any of your clients expect a sexual encounter? Like, do you maybe get like novice, you know, people who come to your business and expect that it is more sexual rather than just kind of these, you know, just kind of a fetish session? And if so, how would you handle something like that?
Well, we try to talk with them when they book their session. Goddess Destiny will talk with them about what their interests are.
So she lays it on the table.
Yes, she will talk with them about it to begin with and ask what their expectations are. And she will explain to them what to expect and what maybe not to expect.
Okay.
Then when they get in the session, some people have been known to, you know, ask for maybe something more than what is allowed.
Gotcha.
And
now I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, at this point, do you have regulars yet?
Yes, I have a couple of regulars.
All right, good.
Yes. And
now, could you feasibly have enough regulars at some point? Would it be consistent enough for you to say make a career out of this?
That's really what everybody wants to get to. That's sort of where everybody sort of longs to get to. But I don't know if that could ever possibly happen for me.
Okay.
I'm not pushing too hard, but I am always taking on new clients. I'm always learning new things. So, I mean, the thought is there for me to make it my full time, but I'm also not expecting that. I'm kind of just rolling with the punches.
Okay. Now, are you an equal opportunity dominatrix? You will dom both men and women?
Absolutely.
All right. Mm. Now, I'm interested about your clients in general. Like, once you have a regular, how much about them do you know? Like, do they share personal information with you in terms of, you know, if they're married, do their partners know that they're doing, you know, coming to see a dominatrix? What do they do for a living? Or is it really just private? You know, they're here, these are their fetishes, and that's it.
There are a select few that I do know more about their personal life than maybe the average client that comes in.
Okay.
I do like to get to know them a little bit. I don't necessarily want to know about their personal life, but I do like to get to know them a little bit about what makes them tick, you know, a little delve into why they have the fetish they do, understand what it is that excites them about their fetish and kind of work into that. Along the way, I do learn some personal information, but everything I keep confidential and I don't, you know, everything is confidential between me and that client.
Gotcha. Now, in general, what types of people are your clients, like demographically speaking? Do you have a wide variety of cultures and ages and sexes and ethnicities and things like that?
They tend to be, at this time right now, I have only had Caucasian men.
Oh, okay.
And they've been of age range anywhere between 20 and 60.
Wow.
So the age range is pretty broad, but it has been, for me, only Caucasian men. Now, there have been other doms that I work with that have had African-American men, Asian men, you know, all different types of ethnicities. But for what I have seen, I'm going to have to say there may have been the exceptional one or two, but 95% has been Caucasian men.
And what about women? Do you see any women? I know you said you've only had Caucasian men, but
right.
Have you seen any women who come in to be dominated?
No, I haven't, honestly.
That's probably not popular, right? Like, that's
no.
Probably not. Women don't want to do that because why? Why do you think that there aren't women who want to be? Well, let me put it to you this way. Obviously, when you go to a club, there's probably a mixture of subs and doms, right?
Right.
But, like, probably not a woman sub would come to a dominatrix business, I would say.
Not that I know of. I've never seen a woman come where I've worked to be dominated. There are a lot of women subs out there, and I do believe that they have it easier finding male dominance or female dominance, and they're not maybe as, you know, it's not as hard for them to find somebody to dom them to, you know, but for the men, it tends to be a tougher time because it's, you know, it's sometimes frowned upon or because they're men, it's not easy for them to find a female to dominate them.
Sure.
So they'll go to somebody who will just do it and they'll get what they want. And
gotcha. So how do you, all right, well, actually, while, as you were talking, I was thinking about this question. How many people in your life know that you do this? Like, is this something that you share with, you know, kind of your closest friend circle or not even that? Does anybody in your family know? What kind of privacy level do you need in order to be able to make this work for you?
There's a very select few that know in my personal life. It just keeps things a lot easier for me.
Sure.
And I less questions, you know.
Absolutely. Do you ever have to explain where you are? Because you have specific hours, correct?
Yes.
Is there ever, I would assume you can't be sitting there texting, but I mean, you know, is anybody ever been like, well, where were you? Like, but you know, whatever. And what do you say? Do you just kind of go, oh, I have a new job, or do you, oh, grocery store. You
right.
Know, like,
exactly. There's always an excuse. There's always something that I can come up with.
Okay, good. Okay. And now you don't have to answer this question if you're uncomfortable, whatever, but I would assume just because of the nature of what you're doing that, you know, sometimes you might get turned on when you're with a client. I mean, have you ever? Would you admit it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
I would say it happens more than it doesn't happen.
Gotcha.
And it's for different reasons. Usually, a lot of the times it's just because I am so happy or enjoying the fact that they're enjoying themselves so much. That's usually how it works for me. When someone's enjoying themselves and I see that they're really into it, I feed off of that.
Gotcha. Now, what set the scene when somebody walks into the establishment? Is there like a receptionist?
No, there's a main floor.
Okay.
And they come in, and it sort of opens to like a lounge area. And then we take them upstairs to the dungeon area.
Oh, upstairs to the dungeon. That's interesting.
Yeah, but how it's not like in a basement.
Now, does somebody ring a bell? Do you get buzzed in? Okay, so you get buzzed in, and then whoever's available will just let the client in.
Right. Nine times out of ten, it'll be the dom that they're supposed to be meeting with.
Oh, okay. Kind of like the way a therapy office would be.
Right.
Okay. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Now, the difference between this type of a setup, like it's basically an office building, correct?
Sort of.
Sort of? Or the floor of a house or something?
It's a combination of the two.
Okay. So what do you think is the draw to have this type of an establishment to participate in this, you know, finding a dominatrix this way than say going to like an S&M club per se?
Going to an S&M club means that you'll have to be very, you will have to be open to having to talk to people and letting them know, maybe your fetishes and maybe being turned down.
Gotcha. Okay.
This, going to a regular club, you're almost going as if you're like a single person going to try and find a mate, but you know, you're trying to find someone who's interested in the same thing you are so that you can explore that. And it's not easy to just sit there and say, hey, I like to smell women's feet.
Right. Okay. Like, yep.
That's a tough thing to maybe have to say to somebody. So instead of having to go through maybe that kind of anxiety, they'll go somewhere where they know that the people know what they're doing and understand what they feel and enjoy and aren't going to judge them.
Right. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, did you have any fears like in the beginning part of the process? Like, what were your biggest fears kind of getting into this business?
I guess I didn't really have too many fears because I kind of understood what it was about before I jumped into it. And I've known a couple of people, friends of mine, that have been in that type of lifestyle for a while. So okay. I kind of learned a lot from them. So I wasn't very afraid. More or less, losing a lot of my free time was something that was kind of scary to me.
Gotcha.
I barely have any time to myself because I'm either at the dungeon or working at home and keeping in touch with the people that I keep in touch with.
Sure.
Okay. So that to me was a little bit tough to lose the time, my own time. But at the same time, I do enjoy it so much that it doesn't make it too bad for me.
Do you enjoy this more than you have enjoyed, like, say, other traditional jobs you've had in the past?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's a tough job market out there still, right? So was that part of the reason why you said, you know what, now's as good a time as any to start to look at this?
Absolutely. I was looking for something that was unconventional, something that wasn't the regular, the norm. And I feel like now's the time to jump out of the regular job, the normal job. And if there's something you can find that you really enjoy, give it a shot now, right. You know, and that's why I just said, you know what, here's my time. Here's the time for me to do something. And I chose to go with it. And it thankfully was worth it for me.
Right. Absolutely. Now, how do you think this job affects you at all psychologically?
I feel that it has made me a stronger person. I feel it has made me,
See, now that's interesting that it made you a stronger person. I think that's awesome. Go ahead.
Yeah. I've always been sort of wishy-washy in my life and, you know, not very able to take control over situations. And this has shown me that I am able to take control and that there's nothing wrong with being assertive and there's nothing wrong with having opinions and being able to act on them and to, you know, it's just made me a lot stronger to stand on my own, you know.
Absolutely. Now, how long do you envision yourself doing this? Is it based on if you build a client base or do you base it on how happy you are doing the job or perhaps how much money you can make? Like, do you have any kind of, say, short-term goals? In 5 years, I would imagine I would be still doing this, but I would like to be, you know, like doing it full-time or making this amount of money. Like,
right.
Do you set any kind of goals for yourself, or do you just say, we're just going to let it run its course and see what happens?
Well, for right now, I'm sort of going on the let it run its course and see what happens. Gotcha. My short-term goals are always to build up my clientele and to build and to have good communication with my clientele. That is always top on my list.
Right.
But as for a long-term goal, I try not to think too far in the future when it comes to this, only because you never know, you know what I mean? You just never know what could happen. Like, even to me, physically, God forbid, something could happen and I can't do it anymore. Or,
right.
You know, I try not to go there in my head. I try to just say, for as long as I enjoy myself and it reaps some sort of benefits, then I will stick with it for now.
Right, absolutely. So, pretty much those are my questions, but I was just wondering, do you have any suggestions for a fledgling future dominatrix?
The best thing, if you're looking to get into something like this, is to, if whatever city you're closest to, is to kind of look and see if there is a house of doms already set up there. And sometimes you can find that online. A lot of the times they have websites. And I would suggest looking into that and looking to talk to the people that work there. And maybe either, maybe not interviewing them, but, you know, going in and seeing what they're about. Because better to be with more than one person than to go out on your own and try it on your own alone.
Gotcha. You know? All right. That's
especially
good advice.
Especially with a lot of people don't have any kind of training or any kind of knowledge on it. Don't go out on your own and do it. Look for a group of women or men that are doing it already and try and associate yourself with them.
Absolutely. Good advice. Well, Ms. Teagan, thank you so much for your time. I know you have somewhere to be, so I just want to say thank you again. I really appreciate you being open and honest and forthcoming about this new adventure for you, and I hope that we can keep in touch about it in the future.
Absolutely.
So, my listeners, this has been Ms. Teagan, and she works for Goddess Destiny, and you can look her up on the internet at destinieschamber.com, and her name is Miss Teagan. So thank you so much, and we will talk to you at a later date, Miss Teagan.
Thank you very much.
Good night.
Good night.
So tonight, I interviewed Miss Teagan, and that was the first half of my show, because she had somewhere to be. So I am going to commence with the rest of my show, and I've got some good stuff still ahead for everybody. And the first thing I'm going to do is my list of the week. Todd, are you a big fan of my list of the week?
They're fun.
This one is going to be fun. It's not, sometimes I notice that when I do my list of the week, like, it takes me a lot of notes and things like that to have my top 10. And if it's a movie or if it's a TV show or whatever the topic is, generally there's some research that's involved. But this one was very simple and very fun to do. So here is Leah Love's list of the week. It is the top 10 least sexy nicknames for the penis. And Todd, guess where I looked these up?
Hard telling.
Oh, good.
Get it? Ha ha. Get it?
Oh, I get it. But I looked them up in the dictionary. Okay. Alrighty. So, number 10, twig and berries. There cannot be anything less sexy than calling your penis and scrotum twig and berries. Awful. Number 9, Rodzilla. Is that really in the heat of passion? Oh, Rodzilla. Yeah, not going to happen. Not sexy. Sorry, people. Number 8, wedding tackle. Wedding tackle. I really had to say that a couple of times because what does that even mean? Wedding tackle. Nope. Unsexy. Number 7, anaconda. Oh, yeah. See, now if somebody says anaconda, I immediately think of Ice Cube and Jennifer Lopez in the Brazilian jungle or wherever they were. Not sexy. Number 6, least sexy nickname for the penis, Old One Eye. Have you ever been called that, Todd?
No.
Old One Eye. Unsexy. Thank you very much. So, number 5, Lincoln Log. And these are true, by the way. These were given to me by I polled people. I looked on the internet. These are tried and true nicknames for the penis that men have used these to describe themselves in the heat of passion. Number 4, Tallywhacker. Tallywhacker. So you have a big problem with that one. It sounds like a gardening tool to me. Tallywhacker. And does not conjure up an evening of romance when the appendage that you're nicknaming Tallywhacker is coming close to my beautiful, delicate lady parts. Number 3, Trouser Trout. See, again, the visual of Trouser Trouts. I can't even talk about it. Number two, this is kind of timely. And I have to tell you something. I hear this all the time in the street or, you know, kids making fun, whatever. Number two, Disco Stick. And that was, I believe, brought on by Lady Gaga. So thanks for that. And the number one least sexy nickname for the penis, Skin Flutes.
Wow.
Skin Flute. You've heard that, right?
It's frighteningly terrible.
But isn't that just the worst? Skin
Flute. It goes without reason that there's something wrong with people who come up with these names.
You know what it reminds me of? Back in the 80s, remember when, what was it, Men at Work? And they had that, the Down Under song. And I remember they went on Solid Gold, that show. And they had the flute player who did the do-do-do-do-do-do. That's what it makes me think of, the Skin Flute. Anyway, I do have a couple of honorable mentions that are kind of funny, but definitely not sexy, which I've heard many times. And one honorable mention is pecker. Terrible. I hate that word. It's awful. And it's like pecker. It's like the second half of woodpecker. Terrible. Mr. Happy. If anybody, I'm telling you right now, ladies, if you ever meet somebody who points or in any way references to his penis as Mr. Happy, get out of there. And then also an honorable mention is anybody, whether it's the man or the whoever the partner is, the woman, calling the penis Lil, whatever the guy's name is. So if your boyfriend's name's William, Lil Bill, or Lil John, that just doesn't work. You don't want to call it Lil. Yeah, he's little because he's the literal, he's the symbol of the whole man you're dating, but you don't ever want to call a penis little and therefore very unsexy. And also my in-house producer, Adrian Sterling, who produces now, you know, not on the air because he's got other things going on in his life, ho-ho, did want to, you know, add his top five because he thought mine were not as exciting, but I thought my list was pretty good. But so I'm just going to give you my in-house producer's top five because he was cracking himself up over these. So Adrian Sterling's top five unsexy nicknames for the penis. Number five is Pimp Stick, which I don't even like saying it. It mucks up my mouth. Number four, and I asked him this and I'm pretty sure he made this up because I don't ever remember hearing this. Number four, Venus Maximus.
Help us.
Venus Maximus. Number three, Meat Missile. I have to tell you something. If I'm ever in the throes of passion and any dude whispers in my ear, here comes the Meat Missile. Oh, my God. Okay. Meat Missile, number three. Number two, Tennessee Throat Warmer. I'm sorry. Tennessee Throat Warmer. Come on, that's good. And I'm pretty sure he made that up. He's killing me. And number one, Pepito. You know, that sounds like something that Texans would use. They're very close to the border. So Adrian Sterling's top five least sexy nicknames for the penis. Pimp Stick, Venus Maximus, Meat Missile, Tennessee Throat Warmer, and Pepito. So there's my list or lists of the week. And already next week, I'm planning on the top 10 least sexy nicknames for female body part, the vagina. So that'll be a good one. Although I don't know if I'll crack up laughing at that because, you know, I have one. But we'll see. Could be fun. Could be interesting. And on tonight's episode, finally, we will get to listener email. Yay! So I only have two letters. I actually did have a total of about five because I wanted to interview Miss Teagan today. I just cut it down to two. So I'm going to commence with reading letter number one. And it says, "Dear Leah Love, I hope you can help me. I recently got married and am very much in love. My sex life is better now than it ever was, and my husband is very attentive in and out of the bedroom. Prior to meeting my husband, I had a very hard time reaching orgasm except with myself. I have had earth-shattering orgasms with my husband almost every time we have sex, but I have not had an orgasm in 2012. We are doing everything as we were before, but no luck. The only new medication I am on is hydrochlorothiazide, which is a low-dose diuretic. What can we do, or what are we doing wrong? I know if anyone can help me, it is you. Much love, Jamie in New Jersey. Well, first of all, thank you for your letter, Jamie. I really appreciate it. And, you know, one of the first things I always have to look at when it comes to that type of a sexual dysfunction is your level of stress in your life, because that can affect both the man and the woman, or the man and the man, or the woman and the woman. So you always want to look at, has stress increased in your life? And if it has, and you really need to be honest with yourself, if you have a couple of more things going on the last few months, you know, you need to look at that and figure out ways to reduce your stress, so, because that could be a factor. Also, in your letter, you didn't mention your age, but you did mention that you were on a diuretic, so I'm going to guess that you're not 20, although you could be. But also having this type of a problem could be a sign of early menopause. And, you know, some women, I have met women in my business who have gone through menopause at 30, and I think my family, the women go into menopause at 50 or 55. So it can vary in between there. But menopause, you know, that's when you have start having hormone problems. So that could be also a part of the issue. Also, women have been known to have increased sexual drives as late as 40. But if you have any female issues that have been treated, for instance, if you had to have a hysterectomy, if you had to have, or I don't know if you had an hysterectomy, but if you had one, say, prior to having orgasm problems, and, you know, you had them previous, or had them when you already had a hysterectomy, and now nothing's changed from that, that might not be it. But I'm just throwing that on the table. But let's take a closer look at the medication that you're on. It's called hydrochlorothiazide. I did look it up, and a significant side effect listed for this medication is erectile dysfunction. Now, the penis gets hard the same way that our clitorises do. Blood fills up the penis gets hard, men are sexually excited, good to go. The same thing works with our clitorises. Blood fills the clitoris, it swells, and we're excited. It could very well be that the medication could be an issue, and no matter how small of a dose you're taking. And I just found it interesting that it mentioned all the side effects for men, and it didn't mention any for women. So, and I did a couple of different searches. But also, you know what, Jamie? I obviously am an adult product seller, and I've been very successful at it for over 10 years. And I always ask people, when any type of sexual issue arises, have you tried using a vibrating bullet? Because I say this because a bullet can deliver a very intense, direct stimulation to your clitoris in a way no human touch can. And perhaps your clitoris might just need to relearn once it went on a medication. Maybe you just need to kind of reset it, if that makes sense. Of course, it doesn't
relearn
mean...
Relearn what you have learned, young Jedi.
Hello?
Hi, I was interjecting.
Wait, is that Yogi?
That was some Yoda interjection there. Unlearn
Yoda.
What you have learned, young Jedi.
Why, thank you. I don't even know what to respond to that because, you know, I don't... What Star Wars is that from? I'm just kidding.
Oh, Lord.
I'm just joking.
Blasphemer!
I know. I'm sorry. But, well, Todd, do you have any input on this listener email?
No, I'm not going to have much input on this one.
Okay. Well, if Yoda feels a need to inject, Waka Waka inject, any additional advice, I would appreciate it. But I just will round it out with this. I always just want to make sure females know that any toy use does not mean you don't love your husband, or it doesn't mean that you will never get back on track with your orgasms with him. They're just a tool, and they help. It may just, you might just have to shake it up a little bit, test your clitoris with the toy, use different speeds, and have your partner use it with you and on you. One good method is to have your partner go down on you using his lips and tongue, but to intersperse that with a lightly vibrating bullet. This way your partner is still performing on you and with you, and you will still have that intimate connection. So, Jamie, if you're listening, try incorporating the toy and write me back with your result, and we'll continue from there. So thank you very much, Jamie, for writing. So I hope some of that helps. And now we have letter number two. Dear Leah Love, love the show. That's encouraging. I am a young single guy who is in search of a long-term committed relationship. I'm also a freak. How can I find someone who is interested in kink as I am? It seems like it can take years to find the truth about whether or not someone I'm in a relationship with is interested in a more adventurous, creative, and progressive sex life. Is there anything I can do to increase my chances of finding someone I'm compatible with in this way? Also, how soon is too soon to bring up my kinky ways? I'm not getting any younger help. Freak Seeker in Washington, D.C. Well, thank you, Freak Seeker, for your letter. I really appreciate it. And, you know, this is very interesting. My first thought is always try to go to places where you may find other freak types. And I'm, of course, using freak because that's what Freak Seeker uses. Myself, I don't think, as long as you're doing something between yourself and another consenting adult or to yourself, you know, I think everything's fair game. To me, nothing about sex is freaky. We're all human. We all have different needs. We all have different wants. We all have different things that turn us on and turn us off. So, therefore, I don't think anybody with a, you know, non-traditional, you know, sex need is a freak. So I'm just going to say that. I'm only going to use freak because Freak Seeker used it. So, but anyway, Freak Seeker, perhaps there are some bars in your area where progressive sexual people go. I don't know if there's a way to find a good bar where heterosexuals can go and hook up right on the premises, because I think that type of a bar would not be advertised, and I'm sure the loyal clients would never spill the beans. I did do a quick search for local bars or local establishments for you and didn't really come up with much. And the general consensus is that, you know, a pickup bar is probably not the right exact place because, you know, you don't really, it's not like everybody's there for, they're there for the same reason, but not everybody's there. And you're not going to know if they're like kind of freaks in the bedroom or not. I do have a quote that I'll get to a little bit later about that very topic. But here's the thing. I can't imagine being a man having to find a like-minded female in this situation, because in many cases, I would say a woman who has a freakier side is way more agreeable to a man who may not be than the other way around, if that makes sense. Like, I think that if a guy thinks a woman is hot and she's kind of into some non-traditional stuff in the bedroom, that he's going to be like, oh my God, I lucked out. Whereas it could almost kind of work against a dude, you know, if it's a guy who's kind of a little adventurous in the bedroom and the woman isn't. So we'll have to see how that plays out. So in other words, I wouldn't recommend hanging around a sex toy shop as a single man and trying to, you know, find some women who are like maybe buying vibrators and going and trying to hit on them. That's not going to work. But have you tried looking for, say, other like-minded men to share information? I mean, I myself have utilized adultfriendfinder.com on a couple of occasions when I was dating because I felt that I also was interested in maybe being very open and very liberal about sex, and that, you know, the kind of guys that I were dating, this is 15 years ago, it just started to, I just felt like I was a little more progressive than them. They were a little more traditional minded. And I did come out of Adult Friend Finder, of all places, with two long-term relationships and good ones. They were pretty awesome dudes. One guy was definitely marriage material if we actually had fallen in love with each other, which we didn't. And one was definitely not marriage material, but he was really a lot of fun. So I'd say, Freak Seeker, that your best bet is probably to hunker down and find someone who meets all of your other criteria and then kind of ease her into your freak thing and have her join in it with you. I'm sure there's got to be untapped freaks out there for you. And I think it would be very easy with all of, you know, the other criteria that you're looking for to kind of, you know, convert somebody, shall we say. And interestingly enough, I interviewed a dominatrix tonight, and I just thought about this. They are probably the types who would be open and flexible about certain sexual proclivities. I mean, think about it. Maybe you should see if there's a sub-dom club in your neighborhood or in the area, or find maybe a site specifically about that type of sexual interest. And would you be open to dating somebody who does that? Because I would think they would probably, you know, would understand where you're coming from. So check that out. See if maybe there are some clubs you could go check out. And also, it's not creepy for a single guy to go alone to an S&M club. That's what those clubs are there for. And there are probably a lot of open-minded females there as well. And don't do Craigslist, please. Please. But maybe think about joining an online dating site, even if you already have one, and being right out there with your bad self. Like, you can have a traditional online dating site with one, you know, business, like eHarmony or something, but then have another one with a different, it could be the same one if you want, but try another one where you let your freak side all hang out and see what transpires. Because, you know, maybe if you have the more traditional one and you're going to meet traditional women, but if you're a little more honest on, like, say, an online dating profile, and that could be like your backup or your second one, see, you know, see what transpires. Other than that, I'd say let's start a website together for people like yourself, and, you know, we can be partners. So keep me posted on that. But the tougher thing in general is when to bring up your kinky ways in an already, say, established relationship. For instance, what might be right on date number one with Michelle might not be all right with date number four with, say, Dana. And I think you'll know when the moment hits you with the right person. So there really isn't a rule of thumb, and I wish I could be more specific, but listen very carefully to clues. I think that somebody might say something that you could kind of latch onto that's giving you kind of an insider, you know, view into her brain. And a good test is always phrase it as something you would like to do to increase her pleasure, like exploring her body with a toy. For instance, you know, you say that you're a freak seeker, but, and you say you're adventurous, but you didn't go into specifics. So I'm just going to bring up a couple of things. But in a heterosexual relationship, making her happy is always key, especially in the beginning. It's a good idea to some extent to let her explore your whole body and also see if she hits or doesn't hit certain areas for you. For instance, if you like butt play and she doesn't go there, it might be a good idea to have the conversation after sex, but not while you're both naked and afterglow, okay? Turn a traditional conversation the next day, say, over dinner, into kink talk. Sit close together, tell her how, you know, good, how good certain things, tell her how certain things make you feel so good, or would she be open to trying them out with you. Tell her that you're so turned on by her and that you feel there's no limit to the pleasures the two of you can have. So hopefully I answered some of your questions, Mr. Freak Seeker, and I really appreciate your letter. And those are two of my listener emails, and I'm very excited because I do have a few more, and we'll probably cover those next week. Another thing I want to talk about the next couple of minutes is, you know, I still have this wonderful little sex book at my fingertips, and I was looking through it earlier today, and I found a couple of quotes that were kind of relevant to the topics that I thought I was going to talk about tonight. And again, the book is The Wonderful Little Sex Book by William Ashoka Ross. And, you know, I'm starting to really get a feel for this guy. And this is something that's been very important to me recently. And I think it just touches, it talks about our culture as a whole. So, Mr. Ross says, our whole culture has been anti-sexual for hundreds of years. It is anti-sexual because a person who is in touch with his sexual desires cannot be easily controlled. A woman who accepts her sexual feelings listens to herself and not to others. That's because our sexuality is so deep that we recognize it as a truth that goes beyond societal restrictions. Sexuality is a deep truth, and when you know the truth, you live the truth. Some people think a person who does this is insane. They think that listening to the natural flow in your body instead of to the guardians of propriety must be an aberration. As a result, the fear of being condemned as either mad or bad keeps us repressed and timid. I think this is a complete national problem, but I think he summed that up pretty well. So another one that I thought this was just hilarious, honestly. Let me find that one. I got a big laugh out of this. You can play another person's body the way you might play a video game, but you won't feel very good afterwards. I'm not mentioning any names here, Todd.
What? How's that put on me? What?
Nothing. I'm not saying anything specific. I just was hoping to hear you breathe. It's funny. That's what I'm talking about. I just thought it was funny. That's the only thing that's the only quote. You can't play another person's body the way you play a video game, but you can do it, but you won't feel very good afterwards. And honestly, this guy could not have spoken more of a truth about some guys' sexual I would say, foreplay or technique, as it were, is like they're fiddling with a joystick or, you know, like an Xbox controller. And, you know, people, some people really need to work on that and be a little more sensual. So I thought that was interesting. And this is not a book that came out in the video game age either. This is probably 15 years old. So, and another one that I wanted to read for you today. This is a good one because I get this question all the time at parties about giving and getting orgasms. Here we go. There are many misleading beliefs about sex. Some men believe they have to give their woman an orgasm, and some women think so too. Some men think it's up to the woman to give them an orgasm, and some women accept that view. Some women are convinced that a man always wants to come. Some men are convinced that a woman will be unhappy unless she has a penis inside of her. And all these beliefs can be wrong at least part of the time. I think that's really the crux. All of these beliefs can be wrong at least part of the time. In case there is still some doubt, let me say it again. You don't have to have an erection to enjoy sex. You don't have to have a penis inside you to be fulfilled. Let me tell you something. Truer words have not been spoken. A lot of sexual dysfunction, I feel, a lot of the questions I get come directly from that type of a situation. For instance, I did have somebody, and I tried to convince them to write a specific letter or let me talk about, like, you know, the issue on the air with them or whatever, and they wouldn't let me, and that's okay. But they had a specific problem where their partner, male partner, didn't necessarily like fellatio. But the female who was talking to me absolutely loved cunnilingus. Well, the male partner didn't understand that just because he didn't like being gone down on, he felt that because he didn't like it, that he didn't have to perform that on her. And that is the wrong attitude. It also has to do with whether or not one person or the other doesn't have a sex drive. Sometimes you just have to suck it up and do it, people. I mean, listen, I'm not saying that in the, you know, darkest depths of the morning when it's your worst time, you have to give it up every time. But it's all about checks and balances. It's all about being fair. It's not just about you. You don't just have to be sexually motivated in order to make your partner happy. And sometimes, really, you will feel a lot better and get a lot more out of making your partner, you know, feel pleasure and making them have an orgasm when you get nothing out of it. It's one of the most beautiful things you can do as a lover, honestly. And I think that is the problem with a lot of relationships, and especially a lot of long-term relationships. So keep that in mind, my lovely listeners. Todd, how much time do we have left?
Just a little bit.
A little bit, like what,
like
a minute?
About 2 minutes.
2 minutes. All right, so I have one sex in the news issue that I just want to talk about briefly since we only have a couple of minutes. And it came up because I had asked Adrian Sterling this question. And the question is, do you think financial problems lead to sexual issues in a relationship? And of course the answer is absolutely. You have to settle any kind of, obviously any kind of stress is going to affect your sex life. But financial problems are the leading cause of divorce. Financial problems are the leading cause of why two people don't want to have sex with each other. And that is absolutely something that needs to be addressed and fixed before you can continue to have a very happy and healthy sex life. So you always want to, you know, perhaps get a financial counselor, work out the problems, start paying bills, get another job, whatever it is you have to do to kind of wipe your slate clean in terms of finances, definitely do that. And try to keep, you know, an intimate relationship with your partner. And just try to balance your money, try to balance your budget, whatever it is you have to do, because it will muck up your sex life. And that will muck it up on top of more things that are going on in your life. But if you solve financial problems, if you get your debts in order, if you get yourself on track, I guarantee you that you'll be able to have better sex with your partner, or sex at all if you haven't been doing it in a while. So that's my little referendum on sex and finance problems. Because you know what? The same way you would invest in a property, or the same way that you would invest in the stock market, you always want to invest in your sex life. You see how I brought that around, Todd?
Finance, very good, very good.
Invest in your sex life. So that's it for me tonight, my cats and kittens. Remember to write me at leah.love.lust@gmail.com. And I just want to thank you guys for listening and everyone. Thank you also to Miss Tegan, who is lovely. Adrian, my in-house producer, for his input tonight. And of course, you, Todd. I love you desperately. Until next week, I wish you all a good night and very good sex.